Welcome back. This week on the podcast, I talk with Sebastian Velasquez. Sebastian is a former teammate of mine back in high school, and he has now played soccer all over the world. He has accomplished some of the greatest accomplishments. He has some of the coolest experiences that you could ever have in the sport. And Sebastian is now back in Greenville playing for our hometown team, the Greenville Triumph. And in our conversation, we go through his story. I think it's incredibly important for people to understand where he came from, especially new fans to Sebastian. And then we get into why he is now back in Greenville playing for the Triumph. He still has a lot of soccer left in him, and he has big goals ahead for the Greenville Triumph. And if I can ask anything from people in Greenville or fans, supporters of Sebastian and of the Greenville Triumph, go support them. They have a game coming up this Saturday, March 23rd, and we also have an exciting giveaway me and Sebastian are doing. It'll be a Velasquez jersey. So this episode drops Wednesday morning at noon. We will announce the giveaway. So go to Sebastian's Instagram. I'll have that link in the show notes, and you can enter the giveaway to get the Sebastian Velasquez jersey. And most importantly, go support them in their upcoming home games. If you can make it to a away game, that's awesome too. But this Saturday, they have a home game at Furman. So I'll be there. And if you can make it, go show your support for Velasquez and the Greenville Triumph. Another incredible sponsor of mine, which is actually also a sponsor of the Greenville Triumph, is Pelham Medical Center. Pelham Medical Center is about 10 minutes from downtown Greenville, and they are one of the top hospitals and medical centers in the country. And they are so close to a lot of people in the upstate, and a lot of times I feel like people don't know about them. So if you're looking for an orthopedic procedure or surgery, they are definitely your go-to for that. But anything else, they have an incredible campus out there. They have some of the top customer service and ratings in the industry, and they're in the top 5% nationwide. Their link is in the show notes. So if you're looking for a new primary care doctor, or you're looking for a procedure, or you're just looking for help, and you don't, you know, have some things going on that you might want some extra help with, reach out to them, because I guarantee you they can help you. Another great sponsor of mine is Spinx. And for a long time growing up, all I knew about Spinx was they were a convenience store. They were on the corner right near my house, and I would stop in and get my treats, get my gas, whatever. But what they do for their communities that they are in is what makes the synergy with my podcast so important to me. They support their communities. They give back millions and millions of dollars to incredible organizations like the March of Dimes. They're actually doing that fundraiser now. So if you see your Spinx, if you see a Spinx and it's in your community, know they're giving back to your community. And all I ask is stop in, support your local Spinx, because I can guarantee you they're supporting the community they are in. Another sponsor, local company, is Rebel Rabbit. Rebel Rabbit is on a mission to socialize smarter. For far too long, we've been drinking alcohol, and we felt we needed to drink alcohol whenever we were out on a party or whenever we were socializing. And honestly, looking back at that, I think it's dumb. Like, alcohol, now we know, is so bad for you. And Rebel Rabbit is a seltzer. It is alcohol-free. It is infused with cannabis, and it is legal. So they have two different types of, they have a mild hair and a wild hair. So they have one that's a little more intense than one that's a little more mild. So it doesn't matter if you're new to cannabis or you're a regular user, they have something for you. And it could be you getting home from work and relaxing to have a Rebel Rabbit. You could be watching your favorite show on the weekend, watching your favorite game, whatever it might be. A Rebel Rabbit could be the perfect drink for you. And it's also a great alcohol alternative. You're not going to get the hangovers. You're going to get good sleep. So it's a lot healthier for you. And their link is in the show notes. Their website is drinkrebelrabbit.com. If you use promo code LIFE20, you'll get 20% off your order, and they'll deliver directly to your door, or they're racking up the retailers all over the country, so you can find a retailer closest to you. But try Rebel Rabbit. It's an incredible drink. They're on the mission to socialize smarter, so I highly recommend you checking it out and trying it. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Sebastian Velasquez. Sebastian Velasquez, back in the hot seat, man, but you're back in Greenville. First off, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. So good to see you, bro. Always, always great to be here.
It's crazy, dude. We were just talking. You're going to see Berea play, what, Greenville High tonight?
Berea against Greenville High. What's funny is, like, where I lived, I don't know if you remember that whole situation.
Oh, yeah.
I was supposed to go to Berea with Berea for 2 days, and then I was like, I got to go to Greenville High. You know, all the boys were there, so it's exciting. I'm going to get to watch them play today. So my little brother, he's injured right now.
Okay.
Poor guy. He's 17, great player.
He plays for who?
He's supposed to play for Berea. Did his ACL.
Oof.
8 months ago. So he's close to his recovery.
All right.
So he'll be back here soon. So it's going to be interesting when he sees me talking to Greenville to play his
I mean, you talk about your childhood, though. Like, you did grow up in Berea. And I know when you first came on the pod a couple years ago, we talked about your childhood. But for people that don't know, and especially the Greenville Triumph community that maybe didn't know about your childhood, like, take me through kind of like your early childhood and like where you lived over in Berea and kind of what was it like back then?
Right. Yeah, like you said, I grew up in Berea. My mother brought me from Medellin, Colombia when I was 3 years old. My dad was kind of starting his whole life here in Berea, actually here at Greenville, but at Berea. And it was interesting. I guess my mom was, I don't know the whole situation, but I'm guessing she was trying to get together with my dad again or whatever the case may be. But what she ended up doing was staying here. And that's kind of how my life began here. It's interesting because there's a street called Lily Street, and there's a duplex, and it's right beside this house that has tons of cows. It's interesting because it's a duplex house, like where it's like two houses.
We're going to talk about real estate later. You need to start buying.
Exactly. Yeah. So I used to live at that duplex. And then there's a trailer park in front of it. I also lived in that trailer park at one point.
Dang.
And then one night for one of my birthdays, I had all the buddies over. Now, this is farther down the line. My mom bought a house in that same area. And so I had all my buddies over. So every time now I go by the street because I'm with my dad right now. Those cows, one time I would jump over the rails. And when they sleep, you can push them over. I was maybe like, bro, I had to be like 12 years old. And I would push them over and then I would run. And one time my mom caught me doing it and I got in so much trouble. So every time I cross that street, if someone's in my car, I tell them that story. I just think about the cows, bro. I just pushing them over. It's so funny. Yeah. And, bro, from there, like, my life started in Berea. Wasn't easy. Obviously, my mother wasn't making a lot of money. But
sure.
She was working her butt off and trying to make ends meet and everything. And so...
What was the club team back then? Like, what was your first club team?
Berea Fusion.
All right.
Berea Fusion. And I'll never forget that because I'd scored, it was recreational soccer. I'd scored, like, I kid you not. So they would put a sticker on this huge Pepsi bucket. And for every goal you scored, they would put a sticker on it with your initials and all that stuff. The coach was Coach Frank. I'll never forget. Coach Frank, he had a Jeep. He would drive, like, this little brown Jeep. I'll never forget. Super nice guy, super cool guy. And his son played on the team as well. And so he would take me to practice and all that stuff. And he's like, listen, how it started was he saw me kicking a ball with this guy in this huge part of land, and he would always drive by there.
Just
a ton of grass, you know, Greenville was all grass. He just saw me kicking it back and forth. It was with my dad's best friend. His name was Tito. And, I'll never forget. He stopped and was like, hey, like, we would love to have you on my recreational team. I had no idea what he was talking about. I was like, I just wanted to play. So
try to get recruited, man.
Recruited, bro. And so next thing you know, I was playing for this team. It was green. It had the cool little lions here on the corner. And I scored, I kid you not, that tournament, I scored like, it was like 100-something goals. And so you would see the Pepsi bucket, and it was just full of just my stickers and like no other kids thing. And then from there on, that's kind of like, I was 10 years old, exactly. And that's kind of how, like, my soccer started on being on a team. Because I always loved playing, but I never knew where I could find a team.
Yeah.
And from there on, we played a game against Greenville Eagles. I will say, rest in peace, Mr. Rene Lozano.
Oh, yeah, man.
He he was a big part of my childhood as well, especially when it comes to soccer, of what I lived here in Greenville growing up and everything. We played his team, and oh my God, they were so good. They killed us. Like, I'm used to playing every rec game, and we were used to winning every game by like a lot, and then this team killed us like 8-0. I was traumatized, and that's where I met Miguel Theos, and that's kind of like that whole thing. That's where it all started. And but either way, it was still very difficult, because at the end of the day, my mom was working two jobs, trying to figure out who could take me to practice. You know, we didn't have enough money for me to play for teams. You know, it gets expensive to play on a club team and stuff. And so
definitely,
the great thing is that I always had good people around, and people would put their own money, like different families, different teammates, they would put their own money just to have me on their teams.
Yeah.
And so from there, I ended up going to Greenville Eagles for a bit. And then from that team, I ended up going to GFC.
Greenville Football Club.
Greenville Football Club. Andrew Hislop was the owner of that, and had Andrew as a coach as well. And then I ended up transferring again to St. Giles. And that's where Miguel and I played at St. Giles, and a ton of guys, and had a great team as well. Had Pierce Tormey.
Yeah.
See, Pierce was
legend.
Well, legend of Greenville. And then those guys ended up merging together, and they created Carolina Elite Soccer Academy, which is CESA. And that's where that team came from, and had some soccer-wise. I could say I had a really awesome childhood playing soccer-wise, because all the teams we would play for would make it to championships. We would win all the time. We had some great teams. But at the backside of everything, I always knew that I was coming back home to a situation where things weren't easy.
Yep.
And they were very difficult. I think one of the toughest things for me to always talk about is, after CESA, I ended up going to Discovery Soccer Club. Now we're talking maybe U18.
Where is Discovery?
Discovery's Rock.
Rock Hill.
That's where I played with Enzo Martinez, Alex Martinez.
Yep.
Super good. The Ralph Lundy son was on that team. Ralph Lundy, what happened was, like, a lot of the best players from, like, teams from Georgia and maybe North Carolina, they all started coming down. They all went to Discovery, and they invited me to come be on the team as well, see if we had a chance. And we ended up becoming national champions, and I got Golden Boot as well, and that was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And
but this is right before you think about going to college.
Like, this is right before you're thinking about what you're going to do with college, all that good stuff. And like I said, at the end of the day, still, I would come home to a terrible home, but it was a home that we always knew that my mom was getting home late. A lot of times I was by myself, or she was always trying to make things easy on me. She had bought me like a little Honda at one point. I had a little black Honda. I'll never forget my little Honda. And she was just working her butt off to make everything happen for me. And I think that took a toll on her. And so one day I got back from playing. I would always go to the indoors and all that stuff.
Speedy and stuff.
Speedy, yeah. Obviously, Speedy. I think everybody knows CIS. That was like the spot to go and play. And she almost committed suicide. She overdosed. She was going through a really bad depression. I had no idea. She was trying to keep it to herself, trying to keep her son safe. And at that point, I remember when I came home and I saw her, like, literally, I thought she was dead. I remember my first reaction was to put her in the bathtub and put like cold water on her. That was kind of, I don't know where that came from. Maybe I don't even remember. Maybe in that moment I looked it up to see what could help.
Sure.
Just come conscious. And just ice cold water. At one point she was able to wake up and so I was like, what is going on? What happened? She's like, no, I'm going through a depression. Like, this is becoming too hard for me. I feel like all I do is work and work and work, and I can't make things happen for you. So she ended up moving back. She ended up moving back to Colombia, to Medellin. And then from that moment on, she stayed there for 10 years. And so I have to start my life here by myself. So what ended up happening is I ended up going on a trial to Spain, to Barcelona. Yeah. Everybody knows Barcelona.
This is a crazy story.
I was super young.
Hey, pull that mic a little closer to you.
Yeah, I was super young, and what was crazy is that I do this trial. Like, first, the way it happened was I was...
And you've had an incredible youth career.
Yeah, my youth career,
I mean, we're going to get to this trial in a second, but, I mean, we can even talk about like what you did at Greenville High, but like also at Discovery. Like, I mean, you've even at the CISA days.
Yeah, I was leading goal scorer like most tournaments. It was either between Enzo and I.
Yeah.
It was always the two that would get the Premier League Golden Boot.
And Enzo, for people that don't know, is also, he's still playing, I think.
Yeah, he's still playing.
Incredible soccer player, played from Rock Hill.
Yeah.
Y'all two were kind of like, who's better than who?
Everybody would always talk about who's better than who and all that.
I remember when I got to South Carolina, a guy that played with him at Northwestern, I think, was like, Enzo is better. I was like, man, you crazy. Sebastian.
Yeah. That was always the big thing. It was interesting that we both ended up getting drafted to the same team in the MLS. But great guy, great friend of mine. We're great friends. We still talk to this day. And so, yeah, when this trial happened, I ended up, so I was plumbing with my dad at Stax Original. Shout out to Nick and Michael and Frank. Stax is still there. I actually went to go get some breakfast the other day. So taste is always great. So it's not the same, though, because my dad doesn't work there anymore. But he was their cook for 26 years, my dad was. And so it's always cool to come back. We were talking about that the other day, actually, that at one point I was a dishwasher there. And it was the worst thing I've ever done in my life. And I think at that point I was like, I want to be a pro soccer player. we were fixing so we're doing like plumbing or like where you change the gas tubes and all that, needed like new tubes and all that. Pipes. And Anthony Solomon Speedy, most of you guys know him as Speedy. Yeah, walks in,
his name.
Yeah. He walks in and is like, do you really want to be a professional? I was like, of course. I was like, I'm sitting here with this jackrabbit trying to break all the tile. And this thing is like, my dad's yelling at me because I can't get it under control. I was like, dude, get me out of here. I was like, I'm not made for this. And so he's like, they're going to do like a combine at a university, and they're bringing players from all over the world, and they want to look at, and since you're close by, everybody wants to look at you. They want to see what you're about. I had no idea who was going to be there. I just know I had to go and show up. So I ended up showing up, and ended up being Steve Archibald.
Mm-hmm.
And so just so people have a reference, Steve Archibald played in Barcelona in 86 to 88, 1986 to 1988. And he was the goal scorer. He was the Pichichi, is what they call it. Played for Blackburn Rovers. He played for Surfer Alex Ferguson.
Oh, nice.
So he was a legend. He was a legend, absolute legend. So if you watch Barca TV, he's one of the guys that's commentating. Random that he's here in the upstate. And
so random.
Yeah. But when I got there, it was players from literally all over the world. Those players from all over the world. They looked at some guys were from like the Caribbean. Some guys were from like Europe. Those guys from all over the world. It was crazy. And he told us that at the end of the combine, he would choose one player that he wanted to take overseas to be taken to like a second division club in Spain to play in second division. And then, so then we do this combine after a week, and we played a whole bunch of games, and I kept scoring and I kept dribbling and I had showed out, kind of just did my thing. And at the end of the thing, he's like, I want to bring Sebastian Velasquez over to Spain. And then all the paperwork started, all that good stuff. And that's what ended up happening. I ended up in Barcelona. I show up to Barcelona, but never did I was told that maybe I'd be able to go on trial with Barcelona. And we're watching the game. We're watching the reserve team, and they were playing in the finals of the second division. And he was like, and he looks over to me. I'll never forget that moment. He looks over to me. He's like, I can see you playing there easily. He's like, your technical ability, you can play there. You have the ability with the ball to play on that team. And I was just looking at him like, I was like, this guy's crazy. There's something wrong with him. But all right. If you say so.
Sure, sign me up.
Sure, sign me up. Yeah, just take me. And so next thing you know, he wasn't joking. We show up to La Masia. Huge building with the Barcelona symbol on it. Guards have shotguns holding the gates and all that good stuff. And I'm like, we really are here. They open the gates and boom, you drive your car in, they close them, and then you're in Barcelona's world, Barcelona Football Club's world. And that changed everything for me. That changed everything for me, because when they gave me my uniform to start practicing,
yep,
it literally was Barcelona. They have the Nike thing. And I'm like, I was just watching these guys on the weekend.
It's crazy.
Unreal.
And you're like 18 right now still, too, right?
So I was 17 at that point. 16, 17. And they started me off with the U15s. So I was older than the guys there. And then they're like, okay. And they saw me train like 2 days. And then they brought me up to the U. So then we played a game against the U17s, my same age group. And we tied 1-1 and I scored. And I was playing with the U15s against the U17s. Mm-hmm. And I scored the goal. I chipped the keeper in my right foot.
Which never happened.
Which never happened. So I knew something was going my way. Never happened. Then from there, they ended up moving me to the third team, which is called Juvenil A. So it goes first team, Reserva, Juvenil A, Juvenil B, Cadete A, Cadete B. So it's not by age, it's kind of like just by ranks. They moved me up to the Juvenil.
So you're like in the middle of the pack now.
So now I'm two teams away from being from the first team. So it's like basically, let's say the third team.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm seeing players that I had seen on TV, like young guys that, I mean, they had Mark Muniesa, they had Rafinha, they had Jonathan Dos Santos, not Giovanni's brother, which is a funny story because I went to go get a little bit of tape for my ankle, or I went to go do something in the trainer's room, and I see the kid, and I'm like, bro, has anyone told you you look just like Giovanni Dos Santos?
Brother.
And he looked at me and was like, I'm actually his brother, and I was like, no way. And so then we kind of started like a cool little friendship there, right? Little conversation stuff, and he kind of took me under his wing. And then we started playing, and everything was just going for me. It was crazy. Everything at that trial was going for me. There's only one drill where I can say that I struggled when they were doing the one-touch possession.
Mm-hmm.
That, since I was always training on my own, it's very difficult when you just do one-touch and you don't know how people play or people's, like, movements when you're going to play one touch. So that part was difficult, but those guys were just boom, pinging, knocking it, pinging it. But they're training with each other every day. But other than that, when we were free playing, dude, I remember we played small-sided, and I grew up playing small-sided my whole life. You know, 5v5, Mexicali, all these different places, destroying in 5v5. And so then they told me, we want you to stay 6 months, but because you don't have any professional games under you. Only places I were playing was either Greek or
CISA.
All these different, I was at CISA at the time. I had no professional
experience
at all. And all these young guys, they've at least played some type of games.
Yeah, because in their world, you start playing those games so young.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And these are guys that are making, even though they're young, they're making $250,000, $200,000 just being.
They're on the U18 team.
And they're on the U.S.
out. Yeah, they're doing nowadays. Yeah.
And so you think about that, and I was coming from, just playing regular soccer in Greenville. And so then they said 6 months, and then I was like, I can't stay because I don't have a U.S. passport. At that time, I still had my residence for the U.S., and I had my Colombian passport. And so the visa situation is where it got complicated. Now, I've always thought to myself, if Barcelona really wanted to make it happen, or they could at least push to figure out how to get me to stay there at least for 6 months.
Yep.
But they wanted me to take care of it because they didn't want to invest their own money without knowing what to expect 6 months from seeing me there. So then my agent got kind of mad. Well, Steve kind of got upset and was like, nah, you know what? I'm taking you to Manchester United in 2 weeks. And I was like, all right, here we go again with the crazy statements. And so, unfortunately, I had to end up leaving. And then Espanol kind of found out that I was on trial with Barca, and so they wanted to see me. So then I had to do the whole visa process again. And that's kind of where it sucked, because now it was kind of things that were out of my hands. Mm-hmm. And it took me.
The visa thing is tough, dude.
It's very difficult. Yeah. Anytime you want to get a visa anywhere, it's very difficult. And so my next visa, they gave it to me a year and a half after. So now I'm turning almost 19. And this is kind of where I end up going from. I go on this thing, it's called the draft that they do. Those guys had players from, I'll never forget, there was like four Asians, six Africans. No, this is, they call it the draft in Espanol.
Got it.
They had guys from everywhere, Italy.
I didn't know they had a draft over there.
No, they just call it the draft. Yeah. Espanol calls that combine, they call it el draft.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so I still have newspapers about it and everything, and it was crazy. Like, we played a tournament. We played against Villarreal's youth group. We played against a four-team tournament, dude, and it went so well for me. And they ended up signing a 16-year-old. His name was Thievi Bifoma, and he ended up, at one point, he ended up going to first division and debut, and he was making, bro, he was killing, dang, making millions and all this crazy stuff. He did well for himself. And they told me, they're like, listen, you remind us of like a young Messi when Messi was coming through the ranks. I'll never forget when those coaches.
Left-footed, too.
Because I'm so left-footed, and at that time I was young, so I was a lot faster, a lot quicker. I was dribbling around people. And they were like, unfortunately, you're 19, you're about to be 20 years old. Like, we need someone at 16 because the kid they signed was 16 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
And we need to be able to bring them.
That's how they develop them.
And that's how they develop them, and that's how they're able to know what they're getting into. And so I ended up coming back, and that's where I ended up going to SMC.
Mm-hmm.
And that was
you going over there, in a way, complicated you trying to get into, like, Clemson.
Oh, it complicated everything for me everywhere.
Yeah,
because at the end of the day, I had to sign, for me to go over, I signed an agent contract, and I had no idea. That's one thing I've always wished when I was younger, that if I would have had people to guide me.
Yeah, yeah.
In the sense of
a little better guidance, it could have been
knowing the rules. Like, if my mom would have known the rules, she's like, you can't sign a contract to this, or you can't do that.
Which is crazy, dude. My mom over there trying to make yourself, like, living and become what you've dreamed of being. Exactly. But now it complicates you trying to go to college.
Yeah, exactly. To get my education and all that stuff. So, yeah, I end up coming back. And I'm kind of like in this little era of like where I'm stuck. And I have no idea where I'm going to go to college because I had already dropped out of school. Mm-hmm. I dropped out of high school. I dropped out of Eastside High. It became very difficult. I didn't know what to do until Miguel was like, why don't you come to our community college? And I was like, what community college? He's like, Spartanburg Method. And I was like, where is that? He's like, it's obviously in Spartanburg, but it's like, it's close. It's not far from here. And I was like, you think coach would want to take me? And then he's had the conversation with the coach, and then that's where it all changed. At that time, it was Dan Canelli.
Like 100 goals later.
Yeah. And you know what's crazy? In 2 weeks, they made it work out because I was on trial, and then I came back and I had nothing. And I'm waiting on this whole thing with Espanol, and then I ended up going there in the summer. And so as soon as I get back, there's like 2 weeks for the school to start. And somehow they figure out how to register me, get me in, and then they gave me some sort of scholarship that I have no idea how. And then they were like, we'll try to figure out a way to help you where you can get food and you can find a place where to stay and all that good stuff. And that's when my career started there. I played for Dan Canelli one of the seasons, and then I played for Rich Weber the second season, and it was so much.
Did you win like national championship or something?
We won the regional championship, and
which is a big thing for
you. Or actually, regional, we lost. No, we lost the regional final to go to nationals.
Okay.
But we won the state one, and we broke some type of records and stuff. We had like a ton of wins for the SNC. Yeah. I had some records for goals and assists because I had like 55 goals, 33 assists, and like 60-something, 40 games or something. I have no idea. And, yeah, it was awesome, though, because it was so much fun. Like, I enjoyed it. I was with all my friends I grew up as well. Like, all the guys that I grew up playing with on Sundays, like when we were going to play around at Mexicali or we're going to kick around at CIS, it was a ton of the same guys. So we all knew each other, and we already knew what we were about. And then unfortunately the league found out that I had gone on trial to Spain, and then that's when it all became complicated again, which is why everything for me was always like up and down. I was like on this huge high, and then boom, it would come down because some weird complication that's out of my reach. I had something I couldn't control.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I said, I wish kind of that's one of the biggest things I've always thought about, is like the guidance that it comes with this sport, or like with contracts and like ages and all that stuff. Sometimes you have no idea.
Definitely.
And the league found out I went on trial, signed a contract, and I lost my eligibility. So I couldn't play collegiate soccer anymore, because at that point you turn into a professional. You lose all your amateur eligibility. So I'm stuck, and I'm on a roundabout. I'm crying. I have no idea what to do. And And I had already had conversations because I was going to do 2 years SMC and then try to transfer over to Clemson University. And so Coach Noonan and I were always in conversations. He watched me play, came and saw me play and all this good stuff. And then next thing you know, they find out I can't go to college anymore. And I'm just stuck. I have no idea what to do. I ended up buying a flight December 17th, 2011 to Colombia, to Medellin, to go see my mom and to go live there, because I was like, I have nothing here. I was like, what am I going to do here? I don't want to work as a dishwasher. I don't want to do this. Or I want to go home. And to be honest, I had a thought process where if I went to Colombia, I was going to try to find out if I could go
get the team.
get on the team or something. And I remember, because it was so hard on me, what happened, I remember being in the office and crying, and this, and next thing you know, Coach Noonan shows up. And he's like, I just made a call. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, and he asked me the same question. Do you want to be a professional? I said, of course. I was like, it's been my dream. I was like, maybe I've tried every route, but my dream has always been the same. Go to be on a professional soccer team. And he's like, I just got a trial for you with Real Salt Lake. You're going from the 7th to the 10th to Casa Grande in Arizona. And so...
Real Salt Lake, it's an MLS team.
It's an MLS team, yeah. And it's he went out his own way. He made this call, and he's the one that basically gave me the opportunity to go and showcase myself in front of a professional club in MLS. And so I ended up going on this trial, and again, man, just doing what I love to do and just enjoying myself out there, score some goals. Just showed my ability. I mean, I've been blessed. That's one thing I've always told my mom and my dad, and I was just like, even the older I get, now that I'm a lot older, my technical ability is just still there.
Yes, crazy.
And it's like, I have this like relationship with the ball that's undescribable. Like, it's like, I can understand the ball, and it's weird, to be honest. Because I watch all my friends try it, and then they can't do it. Or I watch guys that can do it, but they don't execute it in the same way. It's such a weird concept to think about. And, I was young and explosive and quick and fast and can dribble around people and make all this stuff happen. And you remember when we played high school, I was a striker. You guys were the ones that would play make for me to score goals. And now my role was completely different, because in college soccer, or at Barber Methodist, I was like kind of like a 10.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how that all started. And then obviously, you see how sure I am, they're like, you're not going to be a striker
overnight, dude.
All these guys are like 6'4", the center backs are 6'4", I'm like 5'6".
But now you create opportunities.
And so now I create opportunities for other players, for strikers. And so
Rebel Rabbit is on a mission to provide a healthier and smarter way to socialize and drink. Their alcohol-free, cannabis-infused seltzers are perfect for anybody just trying to kick back and relax after a hard day at work or on the golf course with your friends or hanging out at a party and you want to wake up and feel better the next day. Their seltzers are perfect for you. They are a great alternative to alcohol as well. Their website is drinkrebelrabbit.com. Use promo code LIFE20. You'll get 20% off your order. That link is in the show notes. But join the mission and start drinking and socializing smarter with Rebel Rabbit Seltzers.
I go on this trial. Things go great.
Who was my coach then?
Jason Christ.
Was he the coach that drafted you?
He. So I would say it was Miles Joseph, CJ Brown, and Jeff Cassar, because they were the three that saw me at the actual trial.
Oh, God.
And coach was over in Europe doing some licenses and stuff. And looking for players that he wanted to bring to the Real Salt Lake team. On top of that, this Real Salt Lake team is the first team ever to make it to CONCACAF Champions Finals from the MLS. Because usually all the Mexican
teams. Yes, usually Mexican
teams that win it. And
not anymore, though.
Yeah, not anymore. And so, yeah, it was crazy. They had just won the MLS Cup
in
2009. So it was a sick team. It was a very good team. And they're like... I go back to Colombia, and I didn't know what was going to happen, because they told me, like, they're like, we're going to – they started talking about, we want to put you in the discovery draft, and discovery draft is like this whole idea where they basically said no one can touch this player because we discovered him, but we have to wait to see if we want to sign him or not and all this crazy. And then next thing you know, I get a text from Miles Joseph. He's the assistant coach right now at Charlotte United. And he's like, you might want to pay attention to the super draft. And I was like, why? And he was like, just pay attention to it. He was like, just watch it. All right. And so it's January 16th, and I'm sitting there with my family just watching it.
In Colombia.
I'm in Medellin. And I knew this was the fine line between me making it pro and not making it. That it literally, there's nothing else I could think in that moment where I was.
You would have made it, but keep going.
And so I thought to myself, all right, let's see. And what I realized about Colombia, bro, Colombia, the opportunities are very hard to come by.
Yeah.
Because Colombia is a place where it's just so big on just ego and like you have to know somebody to like get somewhere and stuff. And I've realized that because I've gone out there and seen what it's like with the professional football world. You have to pay agents out there. Mm. Imagine, like, it's not like agents try to get money from a club. You have to pay them to try to do something for you. And I didn't know anyone there. And I'm watching this draft. But I can't watch that actual ceremony. I can only watch the list that they bring out each time someone gets drafted. And it gets to pick 35, and I know there was only four more picks left from each team. Like, not from each team, but there was a lot of that. Four picks left total. Every team had already chosen two. And so then they're like, I get a message from someone, and it goes, congratulations, we always knew you were going to make it. And then my things start blowing up, and I go to refresh the page, and literally it says Real Salt Lake, Juan Velasquez. And what's funny is that on the ceremony thing, since I couldn't watch it, but it even on the thing, you could click on what they put about you.
Yeah.
And it was no picture, no weight, no height, no background, no address, just nothing. And then all it says is Spartanburg Methodist.
Hey, man, but wasn't, so that was like, at the time, you were the first player from a school like Spartanburg Methodist to get drafted.
Yeah, second player. So I was the second player to ever get drafted from a junior college.
Yeah.
There's only been two players to do it from junior college still. Because I've tried to look it up and still. To get drafted in the super draft, straight to MLS, I'm the second player to ever do it. And still, that's still.
You had some incredible years at Real Salt Lake.
You know, it's crazy because a lot of fans used to like love watching me play. It was interesting.
This is the rat tail days.
Yeah, I had the rat tail on top of that. I had like this huge charisma about it. I had all this crazy hair. And the thing is, I played as an eight, which was an interesting position. I've never played in my life.
You played wing, right?
No, we played a diamond formation. And so I remember Saudi Spindle up top, Javi, myself, Ned Grabboy, or if I wasn't starting, it was Will Johnson, Kyle Beckerman, in the diamond formation, and then our defenders, and Nick Romano in the goal. And you had Nat Borchers, Olave, Chris Winger, Tony Beltran. Incredible team, stacked.
Yeah, y'all were stacked.
And so the reason was the three guys up top, they were always attacking stuff, but we would knock it. Like, we were very, like, Barcelona, like, we always had the ball. But my job was when we lost the ball in transition or whatever, I had to go on my horse and go ahead and tackle somebody, go win the ball, and then knock it again. And so it was interesting because I never did that.
That wasn't your game.
That was never my game. I had to learn that. But I was so eager to play that I was willing to do whatever it took to get me on the field. And that sat me down. They were like, listen, we know you're a playmaker. We've watched you play. You're a playmaker. But we can't get you on the pitch being a playmaker. Javi Morales, our best player.
He's nasty.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. He's now the assistant coach at Inter Miami with Messi and Suarez and Sergio Busquets and Jordi.
It's crazy. I mean, the thing about how the MLS has even changed from then to now.
Oh, it's changed even more, like completely changed.
Yeah, you play with some of those big guys, though.
Yeah, so then next thing you know, the thing about my MLS career that I – till this day, I still think about it, dude, and it's like there's a lot of regret in a lot of things that happened to me throughout my career because I see guys that still play that I played with, and there's a league, and I'm like, no, I wouldn't say that I know that I'm better at them because I do know I'm better at them, but it's kind of like I know how well they're doing for their families and how, like financially, how well. Then so I think about that, and I'm like, I could be in a position where I could be making a lot more money and all that stuff. And like, you know, we were talking about real estate earlier before we started the show. And so all those things like come into play because it wasn't, now it didn't become just soccer. It became like a responsibility because now I have kids. I have my mother to take care of. I have a whole, all these different things I have to take care of. And so that's probably the thing about it. And maybe for people that don't know my story. So in 2014, I got arrested for a DUI and I got in a lot of trouble for it. I was a kid that was super known because of my rats around the league.
Mm-hmm.
The whole league would do always promotions for me because of my hair and all that. And I was one of the only young guys that was, I mean, on that Real Salt Lake team, I was one of the young guys that was playing.
Yeah, yeah.
I have young guys on the team. They had tons of veterans.
You had a critical part of that. You were a critical part of the team, yeah.
We went to an MLS Cup final 2013, and we went to actually two finals. We went to the U.S. Open Cup final. We lost that one at home, I guess, D.C. United. And then we went to the MLS Cup final, and we lost that one in PKs. Mm-hmm. And I took there was a decisive PK where if I would have scored it, we would have won. And I had a bad trauma through that because of that situation. It was terrible because I thought, like, the game kind of, like...
You took it on yourself.
I took it on myself, and I felt like the game, like, betrayed me. It was so interesting. Like, I was like, why would the game do that to mm-hmm. me? Like, I'm one of the young guys. I was like, I'm the one that stepped up on a veteran team and all this and that. And it just, it became a very difficult situation. And then on top of that, I had some traumatic events when I was young.
And PKs are hard as shit, dude.
Yeah, and not only that, bro. It's like,
I remember watching that one.
I'm 21 years old.
You're so young.
I'm 21 years old. I had my second year, but I'm confident. That's the thing about me. I've never been scared of anything like that. Like even when I debuted it when I was 20 years old. Debuted against LA Galaxy, against David Beckham, Landon Donovan in his top moment, Edson Buttle, Robbie Keane, Zarvas.
I forgot Robbie Keane right there. Yeah.
Yeah, they had a stacked team. They had won five championships, and I'm sitting here starting again. So then I get man of the match because the first play, we were down 1-0, and I do this like dribble through sign, and I send a cross through the middle, and it deflects off one defender and goes in.
I remember that.
And I got man of the match. So many ups and downs that were happening. And then it hit my rock bottom is when I missed that PK. And then the person that when I was young, I had a lot of traumatic events that happened. Mm-hmm. Somebody did something to me as a kid, and that person was murdered back at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that hit me hard. That was difficult. And so I went on this binge drinking, like terrible. Like I went through like this bad depression and I got arrested. And that's kind of when I hit rock bottom. I hit rock bottom at that point because I was all over the news.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone back at home, like people like would talk about it. And it was kind of like embarrassing for me and my family.
And to you, you know, I think you as the individual take it way harder than like what the community even thought about it.
Exactly. It becomes very different.
Yeah. Like
people don't understand.
You think it's piling on, you know what I mean? You're just like, you feel like you're in a shell.
And
because like a lot of people that loved you were like, you know, we heard about it, but like we were like, oh, Sebastian's a bad player.
It's interesting. It's interesting how that, like when you think about it, once you get out of it, like how dark that place is where people can go. And like, it's like a cage where you can't get out of your thoughts, your emotions, like everything you go through, like everything's very negative. And that's what maybe some people don't understand when people go through like these difficult situations. Like,
I mean,
you see, especially now, more so that a lot of people, like you see a lot of suicides and stuff like that. And, you know, people are like, well, why would he kill himself and stuff like that? People don't understand what that person's feeling in that moment and how their emotions can just take control.
They're
trapped in their feelings and in their head that they feel like you can't get out of. And so I think I went through that for a long time. And then, thankfully, the league was amazing. They took me to rehab, and I got out of that for like, it was like 2 months where I went to rehab, and I was able to clean myself up, and then I ended up going to New York City. And so I got another chance, ended up going to New York City, and that was unbelievable.
Another incredible team.
Yeah.
Players, like, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it was unreal because like when I already knew the players they had, and then next thing you know, I got a call and they're like, oh, we're trading you tomorrow to New York City. And I was like, oh, my God, that's crazy. I was like, isn't that where David Villa is, Andrea Pirlo, Lampard? On top of that, our preseason was at Manchester City's facilities. Like, we were in England. We're in Manchester. And I got to, like, go out there and experience what that was like. It was unbelievable. Like, one day we did my birthday celebration. We did my birthday celebration as a team. We went out, had a good time. And the table that was right beside me, the person that had the VIP table that was right beside was Mario Balotelli's. And he's sitting there chilling. And I was like, what in the world? What is this? Like, unreal. And like, and then like players were there from like Manchester, like from Manchester United. And I got to meet a couple of the youth guys that were from Manchester United. It was so, it's just a different world.
Yeah.
Stuff you can't explain. And it was awesome. We got to play a ton of games and stuff. And
you and Deb Gia became good friends.
We became huge friends. Like, I got to spend time with his dad, his kids, his wife, his family.
Is he still playing? I think he might still be playing.
No, he retired like 2 years ago. He has some academies. They're called the DB7s Academy. He has them all over the world, actually.
Nice.
And he also works with a representation company with his agent, Victor. And yeah, he has like a lot of stuff going on. He's done what I think he. From last time I talked,
I think he's the leading goal scorer for Spain, like the Spanish national team.
Yeah, when they won a World Cup, and he holds the record for most goals for Spain in the World Cup. Unbelievable guy, dude. This guy was one of the most humble people I'd ever met, and he
incredible goal scorer.
He worked his balls off, dude. It was unbelievable to see his work. His work rate was unreal. He was 35, and he was just working his tail off all the time. Mm-hmm. That's where I find it interesting because. You know, you play with different egos all the time. And you have guys that have never won anything and they think like they're like the greatest thing on this earth. And then I played literally with three of the max, like they won the maximum as a soccer player. World Cup, Champions League when they won 3-0 against Manchester United. Leading goal scorer, historic goal scorer. The most goals in Valencia or Sporting Gijón. And you're just like, why? How's this guy so humble? He can literally just be like, I won this one, this, and it. So I've always found that interesting.
Nice.
Yeah, I've always found that interesting.
Those guys are the best, dude.
Yeah, best of the best. They go down as legends of the game. And every time I see them on TV or I see them do something, I'm like, dude.
That's my guy.
I have that dude's number on my WhatsApp, bro. Like literally on my WhatsApp app, their number's there, bro. So it's cool, man. It's cool. And so... Unfortunately, what happened with that was, so when I had gotten my first DUI, I got another one here, actually in Greer, no one knew about.
Mm-hmm.
And I held off on that. I paid the best lawyer, and that held off for 2 years. Like, the whole case was held off for 2 years. And then it ended up being something completely different. They changed to something different. But that case, when I went to fly to Canada, they have to do a background check for the players that are going to Canada for some reason. And then they're like, why do you have a second case of this? And I was like, oh, it's a case that happened in 2014. Like, it just hasn't been closed. It hasn't been finished. There's no problem with it. Everything's okay, yada, yada, yada. And then back in that same situation where I, at that point, I couldn't do anything about it. And so then they actually were going to sign me again, which was interesting because they called me after and they're like, listen, they sent me back to rehab to make sure I was okay. But that time I was perfectly fine because I had already gone through the first rehab and I went to the second rehab and I just told her, I was like, listen, I don't want any more problems with this. I was like, I just want to be, I'll be sober for however long I feel like I need to. And so then they're like, okay, well, they wanted to sign me again. If coach was going to stay, but then coach, they ended up getting rid of coach. And David Villa actually went and spoke to the club. Was like, keep him for two more years, give him a chance. Like the kid gives everything. He has the ability at it. And then what ended up happening, they got rid of Jason Christ. And so then all the players that he had brought in.
That was the same coach you had at Real Salt Lake.
That's the same coach I had at Real Salt Lake. And so then I have to start that's when I ended up. Crazy. The next team I got, different path, completely different path. And the problem is I didn't have an agent at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So I had no idea how I was going to get back into like the soccer world or like to stay in the MLS, which is another thing. I wish I had had better guidance, because if I would have had a proper agent at that time, I think a proper agent would be like, all right, here, we're going to talk to some other clubs.
We'll get you staying in the MLS.
Or you'll stay in the MLS and you'll be all right. You'll be all right. It's all going to work out. But I didn't have an agent. So I ended up posting a video. A lot of times I post videos on my, and a coach hits me up and was like, hey, would you like to play for my team and this and that? And I was so scared that I wasn't going to have a team that I just ended up going to that team. And I ended up going to OKC Raja in the NASL.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I went to go visit my son because Armani at that point was born. And so on September 14th, 2015, I had made a decision after the whole New York City thing that I was going to stay sober. So I stayed sober for 7 years after that.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm on this clean path of soccer. And which was awesome because, like, at that point, then I go and visit my son in Salt Lake, and I get a call from, like, the GM, which was Elliot Fall. And he's like, listen, we have a second division team here.
Oh, yeah. You played for them a long time.
I played for them for 2 years, yeah. And so they're like, we have a second division here team here. Like, we've struggled. We haven't made it to playoffs. Would you be willing to come? And if you do things well, never know. We can probably bring you back to the first team. And so that little bulb in my head. Next thing you know, I was on a flight back to Salt Lake. They gave me my apartment. I knew I was going to be with my son every day. I was like, this is the perfect situation. And, bro, it was different level. I started playing probably my best football at that moment. First seven games, I had like seven goals and like six assists or something. I was going to be, I was best 11 at that season, best 11. I ended up with 10 goals, seven assists. And then the second season again, killed it again, had nine goals, six assists. But I'm waiting for this opportunity to go back to MLS.
Yeah.
For some odd reason, it wasn't given to me. And so top USL teams, because that was the USL, the USL championship.
Yep.
Were offering me contracts of like 140 grand, 130 grand, something unheard of that they don't pay in that league.
Yeah.
Because I was a part of the players union at one point, and there was only a 5% that was making over 60 grand.
Yeah. Which people,
50
yeah.
grand.
People don't know, like it's hard to make good money in those.
Oh, it's very difficult. And second division, very difficult for you to make decent money. I don't know what people are. But yeah, it's hard to
definitely
actual life-changing money, put it like that.
Yep.
And I was getting offered these crazy contracts from all the teams because I was, at I would say in that moment, the best attacking midfielder there was. And next thing you know, Korea came in the way. Korea offered me this crazy contract, and I knew it was something I had worked hard for. And now I was seeing the upside, and not just because, to be honest, if I would have went back to MLS, it would have been great because people would have knew I was in the MLS, but they weren't going to offer me it. They would offer me another minimum and be like, oh, you're back in the league. All right. You're a domestic player. Boom. Take a minimum and be happy. And Korea offered me this crazy contract, a life-changing contract. And that's where my career started in Korea.
You played all over, dude.
Yeah. It was pretty cool because that place was unreal. It was so much fun. The only thing was my lady during the time that I was with during that time, we had Sophia on the way. We're going to have a baby. And she was going to have to travel back to the States because she didn't have like a visa to stay there and all that. And I didn't want her to have the baby by herself.
So you left Korea and came
back. So I left Korea and I came back. And I worked out a decent pay to get out, and that way they wouldn't have to pay me all the money that they were gonna owe me, but they paid me like 80% of it.
Yeah.
And then I can't ended up coming back. And so that's how I ended up in El Paso.
And you had a great few seasons there.
And then we went to a couple finals in El Paso.
I feel like they loved you in El Paso.
Oh, it was awesome, dude. El Paso was awesome. I love El Paso.
Hold on, did you go to Israel or somewhere like that?
So I ended up having like thankfully I had some good seasons out at El Paso, and then a first division club. So what happened was I had 2019, I had this great season with El Paso where we went all the way to the finals. It's the first year. The club of my life, Atlético Nacional. Oh, yeah. Green and white. every Colombian, a lot of
like
Colombian,
the triumph, man.
Yeah, green and white, and they ended up becoming interested in seeing me on trial. And oh my God, dude, it was.
I remember that.
It was surreal. Like everyone around Colombia, everyone that knew me and knew I was on trial was like, "This is the biggest thing that's ever gonna happen to him if he makes it." Because it's a club that's won Copa Libertadores twice, 17 championships in Colombia, top team in Colombia, top team, and proper salaries. I'm talking about these guys make bank, they make money. And I go on this trial, and it's my dad's favorite team. My dad loves Nacional with his heart.
All you boys do, man. Strepo loves them.
Yeah, exactly. All the boys that you hung out with, the Colombian boys, that they love. Strepo loves it. It was unreal. And I go on this trial, and I ball out. First day we played, I'll never forget, 11v11. I was basically on the second team, like the guys that don't start. Against the guys that start. I had two goals. I had two goals and I had two assists. We won 4-2. So then they're like, the thing is, in Colombia, players are known, left-footed players are very loved.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have the James Rodriguez, Juan Fernando Quintero, I think it's Daniel Ruiz. Tons of left-footed players are, left-footed players in Colombia is like the biggest thing.
Yeah, left-footed players in general are just like,
Different. In some way, yeah, something about it is just different. And so that they were like, who's this left footed kid? Second, but they're like, okay, it's just first day. So second day, same thing. Play 11v11. I had a goal. And then they were doing like a coach's combine while all this is going on. And then everyone started asking, yo, who is that left footed kid? Because at the end of the day, like I knew. When it comes to ability, I know what I'm about. Like, I know my ability. Like, if I put my technical ability against some of the best, I have a lot of confidence. Yeah. I don't question it. The physical aspect's a little bit different because some guys are taller, their body's a lot
like straight line faster.
And so that's where it becomes. And then understanding the game, I don't question it either. I understand the game. And so I was like, all right, I'm about to come into the biggest club in Colombia, and I'll be able to tell if I'm up for this level. I'll be honest with myself. I don't need anyone to tell me, ah, you're not good enough. Bro, I was like, I should stay here. So I called the coach walking to his car after day three, and I told him, I was like, listen, I was like, I know I come from America. I know, like, here in Colombia, they have a different view of what soccer is like, but everything's changed. I was like, everything's changed. Football in America is a different level. And not any player can just go to America and just kill it just like that. It's not that. It's not what people think. This isn't 20 years ago. And I was like, if you give me a chance on this team of Nacional, and I know what you've seen at training, I was like, I'll be the hardest working player you'll have. And so I guess for some reason that gave him like a little seed or something. It planted a little seed where it started growing. So day four, which is Thursday, I'm coming into training, and his head pops out the office off the second floor, and he's like, "And call me Gringo."
That's me, man.
He called me Gringo. It was so funny, bro. He was such a funny dude. And it's actually Carlos Osorio. This is the coach. He was the coach of Mexico a couple of years ago, and huge coach, mm-hmm. known, very well known. He coached the Red Bull at one point.
Yeah, I was about to say, I know him. Yeah,
and he's like, listen. He didn't say it like that. He said it more vulgar, but he was like, I want you to stay in Colombia. And he was like, be careful because I know what the life is like here and I know what the girls are like here. So your ass better be good is what basically he told me. And I was like, all right. And so I knew at that point some green light was given.
Engineered Sleep makes the best mattresses out there. Sleep is the number one thing you can focus on right now to better your performance on a daily basis, and you might as well be sleeping on an Engineered Sleep mattress. Like I said, their products are the best, and their customer service is second to none. Their website is engineeredsleep.com. If you use promo code LIVE15, you'll get 15% off your order. So if you or someone you know is looking for a new mattress, reach out to the team at Engineered Sleep, and they'll hook you up Again, their website is engineeredsleep.com. Use promo code LIVE15 to get 15% off your order.
And so then negotiations started. I knew negotiations were going to take a couple of days while I'm doing this tryout. And then like 2 days after, like because my agent had already told me they want you, but they're offering you $1,000 a month. And I was like, $1,000? I was like, I'm not playing for $1,000. That's crazy. That's 12 grand in 1 year. No
way. Makes sense.
And so I think they were trying to lowball me because they knew that I love the team. And then on top of that, I was coming from a second division. I was like, I'm not playing for $1,000. That's crazy. I'd rather go back home. And then salary started slowly going up more and more and more and more. And then 2 days after, I ripped my hamstring. Second degree hamstring tear.
Tear. Damn.
Oh, my God. That's probably been one of the worst injuries and sense of pain in a moment. Mm-hmm. At least that I've had.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, bro. I try to dribble between two guys. I pushed it in between them. And then I try to split them both and get through. But it was two center backs and strong guys. And so, like, I'm guessing from the power that I try to exert to get through them, my hamstring didn't resist. Boom.
Yeah. Dude, it sounds sometimes like a damn gunshot.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It was. Feels like I was shot crying, away. Bro. I was crying literally from the pain. I couldn't move. They had the three of the players had to pick me up, and I had already felt like I was a part of the team because they started laughing. They started giving me. They gave me a nickname and everything. And yeah, it was sad. So what they ended up doing, they ended up paying my recovery because they were trying to see if they can get me recovered by January 3rd. But second degree, I got hurt. Like it was like December 19th. I won't forget that day.
Yeah, yeah.
And January, I wasn't gonna be ready.
Yeah,
it was gonna take like a month and a half for me to get back.
Mm-hmm.
And so that tournament there starts super early. That's the thing. Their break is only a week and a half, and then they're back in the preseason for 2 weeks, and then they play again. And so I couldn't make it for the tournament.
Have they reached out to you any since then?
No, because I tell the coaches, and sometimes I'll get a text and like, hey, would you be interested in coming back for a trial? But it's not always like certain.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was super sad about that because I know if I would have played on that team and I would have went to that team, my career would have changed drastically. Like you go and play Atletico Nacional, then that's when the opportunities go to Europe. Even if you're 29 years old, 30 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
You got a chance to go to Europe. You get a chance to
get a bigger contract.
Get a huge contract. Go to MLS after that. Like It was a very interesting moment in my life. And so unfortunately I had also had a huge, huge contract offer from El Paso. But I had held that off until I figured out what was gonna happen with Nacional. It was just inevitable. I mean, Nacional is Nacional. And unfortunately it didn't work out. So then I ended up going to Miami. Go over there to the Bad Bunny vibes in Miami. And that was unreal because I didn't know what to expect, but I was balling out. Even though my teammate, like we as a team, we didn't do great, but my football was decent at that point. It was at a good place at that point. I guess maybe I was motivated because like maybe I was thinking maybe I could have another chance at Nacional. I don't know what it is. And I think, you know, that's what I've realized, that a lot of my career has to do with what's motivating me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I have the sense that I'm going back to MLS, then I'm going crazy. If I'm having a chance to think I'm going back after to go overseas, then I'm going crazy about it. And, yeah, I had a great – it was COVID season, so it was like a half season. Had this great half season through the whole COVID thing, and then next thing you know, an Israel team from First Division is like, we want to bring you. And they ended up bringing me. They gave me a very good contract as well. Another life-changing contract. And then, yeah, that's when I ended up playing in Israel.
Hey, Israel is probably crazy, by the way. You've told me some stories about that. With fast forward till kind of now.
Yeah.
I bet a big motivation has to be, like, you're back around your family. You're back around people that watched you grow up. Like, the support is... The support of the community is probably bigger than ever for you right now. From like not playing here and you just like get here and everybody's like, let's go.
Yeah, I think as far as support, I think the biggest I've ever had is now. It's been unbelievable. Unbelievable. Not even when I was in MLS. Like, obviously at MLS, people know me because of my hair.
Yeah, yeah.
But people here personally know me. And so, yeah.
What was the conversation like when you started thinking about coming back?
So as soon as my contract ended with Indy 11, I was in Indiana and Indianapolis. You know, I love playing in the USL. I've loved playing in the USL, but I always looked at my USL career as being like a stage to take me somewhere else. That was always on my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I've always been like that. I always want to go for bigger and better things, and USL has become such incredible league because so many players are jumping from here, and you're seeing young guys getting sold to MLS teams and young guys getting sold to Europe, and a whole bunch of crazy things are happening now for the USL, which has changed throughout the years that I've played in this league. But now I'm in a point in my career where I was like, where am I going to go now?
Yeah, yeah.
I actually had a coach hit me like 3 weeks ago. I was like, from Israel. He's like, hey, I want to bring you to Israel. You want to come to Israel? And I was like, I do not.
I'm good.
And so when my contract is like, it gets lonely sometimes traveling so much.
Yeah.
It gets lonely.
You've been all over the world.
Exactly. And now I'm 33. Even though I don't look like I'm 30.
I mean, you've played 12 years of professional soccer. Yeah. Like, 12 years in any professional sport is like a freaking...
That's a decent
long-ass career.
Yeah, dude. That's not a bad career.
I mean, NFL players, the average career is like 3 years.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Like, a lot of professional athletes don't play more than like a couple years. Yeah. Played 12 years is crazy.
And so I was like, what do I want to do? Do I want to go travel again somewhere? There was a couple teams that wanted me in California, a couple teams that wanted me in South Florida, and a little bit of I got like a Peru offer and a Guatemala offer, and I was like, dude, I'm not going through this again. Like, my parents are getting older. Like, I'm not with my kids anymore, so like, I'm not with the mother of my children, which I miss my son and my daughter every day. So I was like, what do I want? And literally the thought process was like, you know what? I'm going to go take a little vacation in Greenville. I came here for like 3 weeks.
You came to my Christmas party, man.
Exactly. I came to the Christmas party and I was like, if I enjoy my 3 weeks there, then I want to come back home. Got here, 3 weeks was so much fun. You see the boys, you go out to eat. You go in and grab a drink. You go in and hang out with your mom. You go and hang out with my dad. And I was like, just imagine just doing it on the daily.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this would be perfect. And then on top of that, being paid to play professional in my hometown where I grew up, I was like, there's no other way to do it. It just blinked. So I hit up Ryan Mackey. I think I'm saying his last name right. He played at Furman. He was a football guy, and he loves soccer now, and he became our fitness coach. Oh, he's the fitness coach of the team.
Nice.
And he trained me when I was little, when I was trying to get ready for my Spain tryouts. And he worked always on my physical aspect. So I had a meeting with him, and I was like, listen, I know you're this and that. You're working with the team. I would love to see what you think if I was interested to come and play here. And we've always tried to make it happen many times, but it would always be halfway, like June, July,
mm-hmm.
because I was coming back from some different country.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now is the perfect time. Now it's off season for
you can start the season with them. Yeah,
and so I can start the season perfectly with them. And
you got a full off season.
He made a call, man. We went and grabbed some sushi downtown. He made one call, Coach Rick. Hey, I have Sebastian Velasquez with me. He's interested in coming. He would love to have a conversation with you. Boom. Coach Rick was like, give me 1 hour. Let's meet at a coffee shop. And then at first, what's funny is that I hope one day you bring Coach Rick on here. He is so funny. And the first thing he said, he's like, you know what? I don't think we can make this happen. And I'm like,
but you,
so why'd you make me come? Like, and he was like, I just don't know if we can pay you. I don't know if we can afford you. I don't know all this and that. I was like, listen, right now, I just want to make this happen. I was like, let's not worry so much about the salary. Let's work and see if it works out for us on the long term, on me playing on the team, on me helping the team, on me being a leader on the team, on me being a part of the community, me bringing fans in, me selling jerseys. Let's look at it in every angle. And we sat down and we just started chopping it up, talking, bro, for like 3 hours. Then we met again at another sushi spot. Another 3 hours. Then we met at a coffee shop downtown. Another 3 hours. And then at one point, it just became like, we knew at that point that we both wanted to make it happen. And so we started our negotiations and everything. And dude, I'm so excited to be back. Like, you know, it was raining. I've been like, you know, people have been buying jerseys. People have my last.
Sold out of your jersey.
They sold out. Yeah, they got apparently like 50 or 20 jerseys just to like already made to see if people would buy them. And then they already sold out. And so now they have to buy another batch. And so I had told them, I was like, I don't think you guys know how much the community supports me here. I don't think you guys can even imagine what it's like. And they weren't sure because at the end of the day, I never had some.
Yeah, and you've been gone for 12 years.
I've been gone for so long. And I was like, trust me, this will be different than any year that you guys. I told them, I was like, it'll be different for you. And one big thing I talked to them about was also the Spanish community, because I went to a game and there wasn't many Latinos there. And I was like, dude, I grew up in
everyone Spanish, knows you in the
Spanish community. Yeah, I was like, I've worked roofing with some guys. I've done some carpet work with a couple of those guys. I know everybody in the Spanish community. And you know, this weekend, you know, it's funny. I always say that in South Carolina, when it rains, people don't go outside. And this weekend, bro, we had our first game.
It rained.
And I was like, no, man, like, please.
The day before and the morning of,
until like 1. And then next thing you know, bro, the stadium had a huge crowd, like great crowd, bro. It's a huge atmosphere. Tons of people had my jersey. Tons of the people that came were a ton of my friends, like literally my friends.
Yeah.
And it was awesome, bro. And I was just like, wow, I can't imagine, like, on a sunny night, next game at home, dude, this place is going to be rocking. And I think a lot of the guys, even Miguel didn't even go, like, some of my best friends, Jonathan. And
I was at
that home. You guys were all out of town. And I was like, all these guys were, like, at weddings and stuff. So I can't imagine when the whole, like,
oh, yeah, everyone comes in.
Yeah, exactly. And so people's support has been unreal. Like, people have bought tickets. Like, that's the biggest thing. I was like, people better not ask me for tickets, because they told me from the start, we're not giving away tickets. You only get 2 tickets. And I was like, all right, I only get 2 tickets then.
Hey, even people, like, I had this guy doing some work at a house next to me yesterday. He was like, oh, Sebastian's back. You know what I mean? I met with this guy in real estate this morning. He's like, oh, we got Sebastian now. It's just like, I feel proud. I'm like, yeah, man, I know Sebastian.
Yeah. That's what's great. And what people don't realize, that Greenville's such it's turned into a big, it seems to me at least, from when I had left.
Yeah.
It's like a huge city now. Like, I look at it as like a big city. And then at the end of the day, it's still a small community. I know everyone, and we know everyone. At the end, you know everyone as well. So it's like, we know, like, what the impact is of, like, us being home and, like, me being able to.
What's it like playing, like, you can play in front of your mom and dad, or, like, your dad?
To be honest, dude, it's been a while since I've gotten nervous for a game, and I was really nervous this weekend. I was very nervous. I don't like to admit that, but I was very nervous.
I didn't even care.
Yeah, exactly, because I wanted to do well for my family, for my friends. I didn't. On top of that, you know, everyone is going to be like, ah, he's not the same. And, you know, it all comes down. Like, you'll run into these guys, or we'll go and have some drinks, and then people start talking nonsense. So I was like, I need to make sure I at least do well enough that they're like, oh, he played well. And the most important thing is that people don't think that. That's the biggest thing I told Coach. I was like, I didn't want to come back here when I was like 36, where I literally couldn't probably move for. And to be honest, I feel like I've taken well care of myself, like, as far as my body and stuff. I'm thin. I think that's
gotten better at it too.
And I've gotten better at it. Exactly. I've learned to take care of my body, because before, like, I'd suffer a lot with these little muscle injuries and stuff. And to be honest, I've done well. This season has been the first preseason I've gotten through with no injury since the past 3 years, because I had an injury. Anytime you stop playing for 2 weeks
and then come back,
fly over, and then you try to go and start a season with a brand new team that's already in season, all you're doing is catching up. So that was the biggest thing for me, to make sure I had a full preseason where I'm fit through my preseason, and then now I'm playing the season.
What's Coach Rick like?
Dude, this guy is so funny. I've always told him, all he does is crack jokes. He's a great coach. He's a great person. He knows his football because he started a couple college programs that were very successful, and he's very known in I would say the East Coast in a sense. I wanted to say just soccer, but he's known like through the East Coast for soccer.
Yeah,
he played for his national team Bermuda.
Bermuda.
Yeah, he played for Bermuda when he was growing up, and he knows the game. But the thing is, he makes training so much fun. He brings us together as players, as a team.
What do you like about the team right now?
You know what? I love the dynamic of it. Like you have just
what position are you playing?
So I play on the right wing, but kind of like coming inside as an attacking midfielder. Sometimes depending on what the game is asking for. Yeah, but they give me that pro. But I'm used to playing just as a 10. But you know, I'll take on a different role, no problem. I've done that throughout my career as well. But I love the dynamic because now I'm on the other side of things. I'm one of the older guys. Probably the second oldest guy on the team, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, because Leo Castro, so we have a guy, he's Colombian. He is good. He's a striker, number 9 tall. Bro, he is a baller. And so he played in South Africa most of his career, and he also played in First Division in Colombia. He's a baller, and he's like the oldest. And then you have myself, who's 33. I think I'm the second oldest, to be honest. And then you have two other guys that are the veterans, Evan Lee, Brandon Fricke, and then you got Tyler Polak. And then you have the next one would be Chapa, but Chapa's 27, and apparently that's veteran, and he's still young. And then the rest. And we played in El Paso together. And his story is actually really interesting. And then you have a ton of young guys from 18 to 23 is the rest of the guys.
How do you feel you're moving with them?
Bro, I still feel like I'm there. I'm competing with them. They know. I think what they're starting to learn about me, because I'm very feisty. I get in people's faces. But I do it the right way. I don't get in people's faces to be like mean. I get in people's faces to hold them to a standard, because I know what it takes to be at top level. Not just to be at top level, to get to top level, play at top level, stay at top level. And I feel like we have guys on my team that have potential to play at the next level. But as long as they, you know how when you're we've all been young, we can lose lack of focus or anything can change your career like that. And so that's been the biggest thing, is for me to be that leader, because our captain is Brandon Fricke and Evan Lee. Those are our two captains. Love those guys to death. Good guys. And then kind of like the one that does like the dirty leadership, the one that's in people's faces and the one that's making sure that people understand that I didn't come here for a vacation. I didn't come here to end my career. I want to win. I play the game to win. So I compete. I love to compete. I love to get mad if I believe the standard's not there. And so that's basically what I've been doing, just kind of holding the guys to a different standard that they're maybe accustomed to. And I know all those things, all those little things. If you fall in love with competing and you fall in love with being passionate mm-hmm. about winning, if you merge those two things together, you become a monster. And I've had the chance to, like, when I've gotten older, I've kind of tried to figure out, like, I've tried to learn from other people, like the best of the best. I watched a documentary, I think it was on Kobe Bryant.
And a good guy to learn from.
And he, you know, the Black Mamba.
What a thing.
Unbelievable. But one thing was his mentality. It's kind of the same thing with Cristiano Ronaldo. Their mentality is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe if I would have had that mentality when I was younger, who knows where I would have been. So I think that's what I've tried to kind of take on, that role where I learned for them to have that mentality.
Yep.
Who knows where their career will be. And that'll satisfy me now that I'm on the other side of my career. And yeah, we've been doing that, bro. And the team has looked very good. I remember the first meeting we had. It was so funny. We're all sitting there. First meeting we had, our captain spoke and they were talking about, like, it was a transition year. It kind of gave like a crutch of like, if things don't go well, don't worry. It's a transition year. It gives you like a little crutch. And I was like, nah. I stopped the meeting right there. And then I was like, no. I was like, that's not how this is going to go. I was like, listen, we don't have Lionel Messi's in this league. We don't have incredible like players that can change the game like that. I was like, this is a blue collar league. Everyone is going to be close to the same level. So it's all going to come down as to your ability, how hard you work, and if you execute the plan. And if we all work towards that,
yeah,
then we can be a very good team.
Especially like hard work and execute the plan.
Yeah. And then you add players like myself. You have these guys that we have a couple young guys that are very good. They've added a couple young players that are very good. We have left. If you bring all that together and you bring that leadership and you bring that unity where everyone's going towards the same goal,
mm-hmm.
dude, that's when teams become very dangerous. And so I think I realized that we were actually losing 1-0 on the weekend, like in the first 10 minutes. Like one of our guys did a foul or something. It was like a PK. And I'm like, no, not the first game, not at home, not in front of my family. And the boys, like, you could just tell since we've been training at this level, boom, something turned on. We scored in the next 2 minutes, and then we went in the second half, first 5 minutes, we just scored 2 goals.
What do you like to the Grimmel community, like the support that, I mean, they have shown, but like you would like them to show throughout like your season, first season here and, you know, the next couple years?
You know, somebody wrote me something in Spanish, and we were talking, it was kind of towards kind of like that same question. I think the biggest thing for me is like, I think for the parents and the people that maybe a lot of people haven't seen me play from the new 12 years from behind, that this is an opportunity literally for parents to bring their kids to see exactly what professional soccer looks like and to realize that the opportunities now are completely different from the opportunities from before. Before it was very difficult to make a pro. You had to go to a first division college, which means you had to have very good grades. And on top of that, you had to play for a top division college and get drafted. Now there's professional academies. Every club, MLS club, has a professional academy. Every USL championship club is creating an academy. Now you have with these academies, that means your kid is always at an opportunity to be seen by somebody and be like, listen, this kid is very good. Bring him to the academy. He can be the next big thing, or he could. And so I think the biggest thing is like get parents to bring their kids, because maybe it could plant a seed that changes the mindset of what a kid wants or what a kid dreams. Because at the end of it, it's a dream. If you think about how many players there is around the world, how many professional, it's only like a 1% of players get to play professional.
Or probably smaller.
Yeah. Even smaller. Just so people have an idea. And if there's more opportunities for it, then that means that parents should expose them more to it.
Yeah. And so the U.S. has grown like
crazy. The infrastructure, every country I think in the world wants to try to change their soccer leagues to the U.S. infrastructure, because I've always said the same thing. When U.S. does things, they do things the right way. And they do things, they
I mean, we've already seen it, I think, too, like the level of play and MLS, even on our national team. Like
the training facilities, bro. We're talking about $70, $80 million training facilities.
Yeah, the youth.
You don't get that at other clubs, bro. They were ranking Real Salt Lake's new training facility that they opened up a couple years ago. They were ranking as fifth in the world.
Dang.
So you can see, because people, bro, you know
how. Miami one's probably going to be crazy.
I'm sure the Miami one is nasty. So that's what I'm saying. The infrastructure of the way things America does things is always the best way.
And we got the World Cup coming.
And I think that's going to change everything as well. So right now is the time for parents to take time out of their day on a Saturday, bring your families, bring your kids, and let them watch a game. And give them that little tunnel vision where they can be like, the kid can be like, oh my God, I want to play for Greenville Triumph one day.
You're doing a great job like being involved in the youth like leagues in the community so far too.
Yeah, dude, I've been here for like 3 weeks, 4 weeks now. And I've went and seen Struppo's team. I've seen a couple more. And we've made a couple of fans. To be honest, I was surprised by the amount of kids that are out there. And to be honest, one thing that's coming up next for me is I'm trying to figure out where I can start my own little training facility thing, or not even training facility, my own little field, and I'm going to start training kids individually. And I want to give them the ins and outs of what it really takes to be professional. Until you play professional, you don't know what it takes to be a professional. I had a different thought process when I was young. I thought it was playing on TV, making some money, being famous, and getting all the girls.
Getting the girls.
I thought that was the pro level thing. It's not, bro. It's completely different. A couple of those things are still involved, but bro, your food at your the way you eat, the way you rest, the way you take care of yourself, the split second decisions you have to make on the field, the way you train, the way you do your strength and conditioning is completely different. It's not just doing tons of weight. It's completely different.
Yeah, the way you train is completely different.
It's completely different. It's a different animal. But like I said, I wish I had all that guidance, even though I had tons of people that helped me out.
Definitely.
And I'm forever grateful with everyone that's ever given 1 cent towards me making it. But the one thing I did realize, there's a specific way
for sure
that this is done.
And it has changed. And it
keeps evolving.
Yeah.
It keeps evolving. Now you have video on every single player,
mm-hmm.
which means that player has to get better and better because there's going to be a way that they figure them out. Because now they can see every different thing you do, every habit, every muscle memory you do. It's crazy, bro.
What when's the next home game?
Next Saturday, 23rd.
All right. Well, we got to get the Granville community there.
We have to get the people there. I have to get you there.
Yeah, no, man, I have to get you there.
We'll
see you, Bass, man. Thank you for joining me. I'm pumped to have you back. I mean, of course, that goes without me having to say that, but I'm excited for kind of like what you just said for the Granville community to like kind of see what I knew you had back at Granville High back in the day. You know what I mean? I still speak about those days and
great.
Excited to
unbelievable.
Yeah, still. I was about to ask you the story about making Blair quit, but
I'll do that to my man.
Yeah.
Shout out to Blair, dude.
Dude, this is awesome to have you back. We're going to find you a house around here as well. And then
trying to find me all around here.
Nah, man, but I'm proud of you. I'm proud to have you back in Greenville, and I'm proud to have you back a part of the community. And thank you for coming on,
dude. Thank you so much, dude. I'm proud of you as well, dude. The setup is awesome. It's sick. I've seen the people that you've interviewed. You've taken it to another level. We spoke about sponsorships you've gotten, bro. That's all your own hard work, and you deserve it. And love the house, by the way.
Thank you.
Love the house. Glad to see you and your beautiful lady are doing awesome, bro. It's always good to see you guys.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you for listening. Give our partners some love by visiting their links in the show notes. Spink's Convenience Stores, you can find the location nearest you. Rebel Rabbit Seltzers, they're on a mission to socialize healthier and smarter, so join the mission. And Engineered Sleep, making the best mattresses in the game. You might as well be sleeping on an Engineered Sleep mattress. For me, if you could give our show a 5-star rating on your listening platform, that'd be greatly appreciated. And thank you so much for listening.